ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। We continue reading Canto 4, Chapter 31, entitled Narada Instructs the Prachetas, Text 29. Vidura Uvacha Soyam Madhya Mahayogi Soyam Madhya Mahayogi Bhavata Karunatmana Bhavata Karunatmana Darshitastamasa Paru Darshitastamasa Paru Yatrakinchana Gohari Yatrakinchana Gohari Vidura Uvacha. Vidura said, Sa, that, I am this, Adya, today, Mahayogin, O great mystic, Bhavata, by you, Karuna Atmana, most merciful, Darshita, I have been shown Tamasa of the darkness, Para, the other side, Yatra, where, Akinchanaga, Akinchana, well, approachable but materially free. But materially free, or materially free, or materially exhausted, like akinchana, gocharam, like sometimes we hear, akinchana. Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Sri Vidura said, O great mystic, O greatest of all devotees, by your causeless mercy, I have been shown the path of liberation from this world of darkness. By following this path, a person liberated from the material world can return home back to Godhead. Purport. This material world is called tamaha, dark, and the spiritual world is called light. The Vedas enjoin that everyone should try to get out of the darkness and go to the kingdom of light. Information of that kingdom of light can be attained through the mercy of a self-realized soul. One also has to get rid of all material desires. As soon as one frees himself from material desires and associates with a liberated person, the path back home, back to Godhead, is clear. And again, a translation of the verse. Sri Vidura said, O great mystic, O greatest of all devotees, by your causeless mercy, I have been shown the path of liberation from this world of darkness. By following this path, a person liberated from the material world can return home back to Godhead. Om Agyanti Mirandhasya Gyananjana Chalakaya Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So here we are continuing our discussion on the last verses, the concluding verses of this chapter. called Narada and Sraddha Prachetas, and also in this entire fourth canto. Here now, Vidura addresses Narada Muni and tells him that by his mercy he addresses Maitreya Muni, his spiritual master, who explained to him the story of Narada Muni instructing the Prachetas. And he says that by his mercy, by his instructions, he can get out of his material entanglement. So we've heard a few summaries of this chapter already, and I think the flow of the story has been explained a few times in the last few days, or at least when we were discussing these verses. I just would like to summarize Narada Muni's instructions to the Prachetas to 2 points. And I think these are 2 points that we always hear, or often hear, in instructions from the devotees. Also, 2 points that we often find within the stories throughout the Bhagavatam, and actually any bona fide scripture, any authoritative text on devotional service. And the first theme which often comes up is the power of Maya, or the power of the material world. And then the second point, which also comes up in these instructions, is the power of Krishna. Krishna is actually more powerful than the material energy. So these 2 points are, in summary, what Narada Muni is trying to present to the Prachetas. So this is can be sort of the nutshell of the instructions. And throughout the Bhagavatam, over and over again, in the instructions of different devotees, we hear these 2 points made over and over again. And also, Srila Rupa Goswami, if you read the Nectar of Devotion, if you hear his definition of pure devotion, of what a shastra, what a scripture is, he says that scripture means anything which follows in the footsteps, or which is in pursuance of the Vedic version. And Vedic scriptures for us means those scriptures that glorify Krishna, and also those scriptures which point out the limitations and the fallacies of the material world. Because we want to become sufficiently afraid of Maya, and we want to be sufficiently confident that Krishna is going to protect us, that Krishna is going to help us. He's going to we can surrender to him, that we have we can take shelter of him, that he's going to protect us. These are the 2 main points. Prabhupada would sometimes say, when he was asked about his Western disciples, he would sometimes say that the only problems with my Western disciples is that they're not sufficiently afraid of Maya. We're still confident that in the material world we can enjoy and we can get something out of the material world. So one of the purposes of the scriptures is to make us aware of the fallacies and the limitations in the material world. So oftentimes also when we deviate, or when we fall away from our strict principles of devotional service, it means, or it's a result that we didn't take either Maya serious enough, or that we didn't take Krishna serious enough. We became casual in our understanding of Maya. We still think, oh, there's something to enjoy here. There's something. It's not so bad. There's still something that I can get out from this world. Or we think, oh, Krishna is not powerful enough. He's not able to take us. He's not stronger than our limitations. He's not stronger than our weaknesses. So then that necessarily leads to us falling away, even just on very subtle ways, or sometimes very gross ways, from spiritual principles. And we find that in different stories throughout the Bhagavatam. For instance, the story of Ajamil. This was just in one scene that he incidentally saw of the prostitute hugging a man, a brahmana. So he wasn't even consciously aware. He wasn't even looking, you know, to see something like that. He just like happened to see it by accident, and then he happened to think about it. It stayed in his mind. He happened to contemplate that, and it started off very innocently. But then, we know the story. It ended up in his whole lifetime wasted and spoiled by engagement and all sorts of illicit activities and deviation from his devotional service. So even though he had this incredible background of growing up as a devotee, growing up as a brahmana, but just because there was a little bit of deviation, but then you have two tracks, and one is just deviating a little bit. If you keep following the deviation, it eventually leads to in another direction. So even just this little bit of carelessness, carelessness, led him astray for his whole life, basically, until he had to leave his body. Also, in the next story, in the fifth canto, the beginning of the fifth canto, we hear the story of Maharaj Priyavrata, and we also hear this. He grows up as a devotee. He gets his devotee training, but then, by the order of Krishna, he tells him, "Okay, you go and have a family life. You go to rule the kingdom." And even though it's by the order of Krishna, he still gets deviated and enjoys with his wife, with his kingdom. And then eventually he realizes, "Oh my God, what am I doing here? I'm forgetting the purpose of life." And then he gets back on track. So even devotees like that, in your stories, they get sidetracked just by a little bit of perhaps like this carelessness. So how much more should we be aware of these things? And should just take shelter of our process carefully and very attentively, like that. And Krishna is saying in Bhagavad Gita in the seventh chapter, actually summarizes the whole thing in one verse. In Bhagavad Gita 7:14, he gives the whole definition of what is Maya and who is he. He says that the material energy is daivi, is divine, actually. He calls the material energy divine. So it's certainly divine. He stresses it even more. He says divine energy is certainly, or material energy is certainly divine. So it's very powerful. And it's gunamayi. Gunamayi means that it's made up of the gunas, or it consists of the gunas. It's like Radharani is called Krishnamayi. She's all Krishna. She's just everything. Her whole being is for Krishna. So the material energy is called gunamayi. So material energy consists of the gunas. So then everything we experience in this realm is under the influence of the three modes of nature. And then also he says she is Duratyaya, she's very difficult to overcome. So the material energy is very powerful, like that. So even if Krishna says she's difficult to overcome, she is divine, then who are we to be able to overcome divine energy? And then Krishna says, "Well, she's my energy, and if you surrender unto me, then you'll be fine." So he points that out again. And we also know that everything that's connected to somebody who is very great also becomes very great. For instance, if you visit a house of some big person, somebody who's really rich and famous, then you find anything that's connected that's in this house will also be special. Like if you go to somebody who's very rich, and even like the bathrooms are not just ordinary bathrooms. Usually you have like gold and marble, and so it's like it's not just like an ordinary bathroom that we know. For those of you who live in the ashram, it's pretty ordinary. It's functional, it's practical, but it's not very special. But if you sometimes, yes, thanks. Hopefully, but. We try to keep things practical and functional, but it's not special. But if something is connected to a person, to a special person, then usually that also becomes special. Even if you go, like in India sometimes, when you go to like very rich people, then you see like the servants, they even have special dresses, special outfits, and so even the servants aren't ordinary servants. They're even being treated special. So what to speak of something that belongs to the greatest personality, Krishna. The material energy belongs to him, so also the material energy is very great. And then so if we can take shelter of Krishna, again, as Krishna says, we can easily overcome the material energy, even though we know, I think we've all experienced, that the material energy, she does have high hopes for all of us. She doesn't give up on us. We are on her playground. We are on her field, and we have to play according to her rules. So, and she's patient, and she's waiting for us to you know, interact with her, give her a chance. And she's very powerful like that. So then, if Krishna gives us these instructions, I think it's also nice if we can believe them, because he knows. Even if you know in this world, if somebody's very expert at something, like I was thinking, you know, I'm sometimes going to Alaska. I spent the summers there, and there's a lot of people who climb mountains, or who do all sorts of like crazy outdoor stuff. But then you meet these mountaineers, and they tell you all about, because there's the highest mountain in North America is in Alaska. So then it's a big challenge for mountaineers to climb up the highest mountain in North America. And so they tell you how difficult it is, how challenging it is, and the different weather conditions and the different difficulties that they encounter, and the technical difficulties in climbing a mountain. And you're like, okay. But then, because, I mean, I don't have any background in mountaineering, so I just believe them because I know they're the experts. And I know they've been up there, and they know what they're talking about. So in a similar way, if Krishna tells us about the material energy, if the devotees tell us about the material energy, like here Narada Muni talks about it, they know, they have seen the other side also. They know what they're talking about. So naturally, I think we can believe them. Also, I think we've experienced, and Krishna also says that in the second chapter in Bhagavad Gita, that the main principle of material life is fear. So when we surrender unto the material energy, the first symptom, the first psychological symptom for us is that we become afraid, or we become anxious and afraid, because it's a very artificial situation for us to take shelter of something that's actually not satisfying for us. And sometimes we hear that there's these three ways how you can be become fearful or frustrated in the material world. The first way is you want something, you aspire for something, and you don't get it. Simple. So that's a frustrating situation. Sometimes a fearful situation, because we're looking for shelter in the material world, and we just don't get it, and so we are frustrated. And then the second option is that we are looking for something and we get it, but we lose it. Then we are looking for some sort of shelter and or some sort of like nice object, nice facility, and we get it, but then we lose it. Something happened to it, our car gets stolen, our family falls apart, our children, they do whatever they want to do. They don't listen to us when they turn 13 or 14 or 15. There's all sorts of things that happen to things that we think we can take shelter of, but then we realize actually it's not going to work. Also, I think for those of you, I don't recommend it, but for those of you who do spend time on whatever Facebook or YouTube, sometimes you have these video links. I just got one. Link for a video on YouTube to like Ryanair, a song about Ryanair, what happens when you book a ticket with them. And so these ladies, they sing about they're all being fired up. Yes, they found a flight for 50p, not even £1. And so they say, oh, it's so nice, they're so excited, but then they keep booking the flight, and then what happens is that they're being charged for extra luggage, they're being charged taxes for the airport, they're being charged for not checking in online, they're being charged for like so many extra, for having to go to the bathroom, they're being charged for so many different things. So that's sort of what happens in the material world to us also. Like we're trying, we found some good deal, we found a good situation for us, a good facility for us to be satisfied, to be happy. But then so many extra charges apply. There's so many extra fees that we didn't really think of. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I have whatever, a nice car now. But then, you know, you have to, there's so many different consequences that come along with it. Or I have a nice facility, and there's so many different consequences that come along with it that we didn't think of before. So then that's a source of frustration and disappointment. So it actually doesn't make us happy. So that's the second option. And then the third option is the third scenario in the material world is you want something or you think you can take shelter of something, and it happens to be perfect, the thing that, or the person or the situation that you want. It's the perfect person, the perfect husband, the perfect wife, the perfect car, the perfect children, whatever you can think of, the perfect room or apartment. But then you're in anxiety that you lose it. And you may not even lose it, but you have the constant thought, oh my God, what if something happens to my children? What if something? What if somebody scratches my car? What if somebody, what if my position that I've just acquired, what if somebody attacks that? What if somebody takes over my situation? What if somebody, what if I have to move out of my apartment? Whatever you can think of. So there's either one of these three scenarios in this material world, which is when we take shelter of material facilities. This is one of the three things that can happen. So it's a very fearful situation. So that's why Krishna says, okay, no, don't take shelter of the material energy, but take shelter of me, and that's so much more satisfying for you, because that's your eternal situation, your eternal position. And one story where we can see this like psychological paradigm shift from being fearful to being ecstatic of taking shelter of Krishna is the example of Akrura. When Akrura leaves Mathura with the mission to get Krishna to come to Mathura, so Kamsa sends Akrura. He says, "Okay, you go and get Krishna because I want him to come to Mathura and I want to fight with him." Because Kamsa had sent so many demons to Mathura, who tried to kill Krishna, but they were all unsuccessful, as we know. And so Akrura gets the service. Shri Shri Radha Gopinath Ki. Akrura gets the service to bring Krishna to Mathura, go to Vrindavan and pick up Krishna. Now, when Akrura leaves Mathura, it's described in the Bhagavatam that he's afraid. Like his thoughts are, oh, I'm a representative of Kamsa. Akrura is a devotee of Krishna. So he thinks, oh, I'm a representative of Kamsa. Kamsa wants to kill Krishna. So if I'm going to Vrindavan, what if the Vrijbasis, what if the inhabitants, they don't accept me? What if they don't welcome me? What if they don't even let me in? So this is his first thought. And then he thinks, oh, but I'm so unqualified. I've never performed any pious activities. I've never performed charity. I've never given in charity. I'm not a big scholar. I have no qualifications to even go to Vrindavan, to go to see Krishna. And then his next fear is that, oh, actually, I'm just such a sense enjoyer. I'm a Vishayi. He uses the word Vishayi. I'm a sense enjoyer. So again, what qualification do I have to see Krishna, to approach Krishna? So he is very afraid. He's fearful as he starts off his journey to Vrindavan. But then as he gets closer to Vrindavan, he understands, he realizes, oh my God, why am I so afraid? I'm underestimating Krishna's power. I'm underestimating Krishna's mercy. And he gives the example, even if a straw on the bottom of the sea, on the bottom of the ocean, even if a straw can be uplifted and brought to the shore by the waves of the ocean, then even I, like sinful and fallen and unqualified as I am, I can be embraced by Krishna. So he starts to think about Krishna's mercy and Krishna's power and his beauty and his mercy, his generosity. And he thinks, yes, Krishna is, he becomes confident. That's the second step. He becomes very confident. And he thinks, yes, and he imagines the whole scene. When I go to Vrindavan, I will pay my obeisances to Krishna. I will touch his feet. And then Krishna is going to pick me up and he's going to embrace me. And then Balaram is going to come and he's taking me to his house and he's going to welcome me with proper like articles, with some So there's a welcome ceremony for me. And he's never met Krishna, right? So Akrura has never met Krishna up to this point. But he's confident Krishna is going to recognize me. Krishna is going to welcome me like that, even though I come with a mission which is not so favorable for him. But because I'm his devotee, he's going to come and see me, and he's going to recognize me, and he's going to embrace me like that. So he becomes very confident just by meditating on Krishna's mercy, on Krishna's power. And then the next step is he actually comes to Vrindavan, and he sees, the first thing he sees is the footprints of Krishna in the dust of Vrindavan. And so he sees the first signs of Krishna, and he's like, he just falls on the ground, being completely in ecstasy, rolls in the dust of Vrindavan, and sees just the remembrance of Krishna, just seeing, okay, Krishna's actually here, and he takes the dust of Vrindavan and it rolls around, and he's just like so absorbed. And then what happens? Krishna is right there. Krishna Balaram actually come. They do the whole thing, whatever he has envisioned. Krishna embraces, he pays his obeisances to Krishna, touches his feet. Krishna takes with his hands, lifts him up, embraces him, recognizes him, of course. Balaram takes him to his house and worships him, greets him, welcomes him like that. So there's a whole paradigm shift here from first being afraid, being engrossed in his own situation, in his own position, but then making this psychological paradigm shift, okay, hey, Krishna is actually great, he's merciful, he's kind, he's benevolent, he can do anything with me. And then he becomes much more confident, much more like, he becomes ecstatic, like that. So Akrura, we see an example of Akrura, how there's like this paradigm shift taking place, if he can take shelter of Krishna, and if he can have confidence in his mercy, in his kindness. Also, one personality who has that confidence, who has that faith, and who exemplifies that surrender is Sripad Ramanujacharya. And today is the glorious occasion of his appearance day. And for those lucky first year students, we just went through a whole course, 2 weeks of studying the different acharyas, the different Vaishnava philosophies. And we're finishing our course today. So you've heard already quite a bit on Ramanujacharya. So he's one of the greatest Vaishnava saints in the history of Vaishnavism. He's the acharya of the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya. He has founded and systematized teachings of a whole sampradaya, which you mainly find in South India. And just one story that I want to tell about his life, which exemplifies his tremendous faith and surrender and dedication, is that of his official initiation. He's accepted actually his spiritual master, Yamunacharya, whom he has never met. Just before he was about to meet his spiritual master had left this world. So he wasn't lucky enough to actually get the darshan of his spiritual master, get initiated by him. But then he takes initiation by one of his godbrothers, one of the disciples of Yamunacharya, Mahapurna. Or actually he starts to study the scriptures from him. And so he learns all the Upanishads and the Vedas and everything, Vedanta Sutras. But then he says, okay, you have to go and take initiation also from Goshtipurna, a person called Goshtipurna. Right, so then Ramanujacharya goes back home and he's convinced, yes, I have to get initiation from this Goshtipurna. And he goes to see him and asks him, oh, please initiate me in the sacred mantra to worship Lord Narayan. And Goshtipurna says, no, this is not, I've never initiated anybody into this mantra. This is a very sacred mantra. Only people who can, who are very pure-hearted, who are completely free from material desires, can chant this mantra. It brings you right to Lord Narayan's lotus feet. It liberates you. I cannot give this mantra to anybody. I'm sorry. So then Ramanujacharya, he's disappointed, and he goes back. And then a little bit later, there was a big festival in Sri Rangam. This is the main center of the Sri Vaishnava community. It's a beautiful place. If somebody gets a chance to go, Tamil Nadu, please do visit Sri Rangam. It's a very beautiful place. Everything is aimed to worshiping Ranganath, the deity there in the city. So there's the whole city is a Vaishnava city. Everybody is a devotee there, and it's very beautiful. You feel a little bit like coming to Vaikuntha when you go to Sri Rangam. So he goes back to Sri Rangam, and there's a festival, and then Ranganath tells the Goshti Purnam also is there for the festival, and then Ranganath, the deity, talks through the pujari. So the pujari then sees Goshti Purnam and says, "Oh Goshti Purnam, you should initiate Ramanujacharya into the mantra." So Goshti Purnam is like, "Oh God," and I was like, "I can't do it," and he goes back, and then so Ramanuja, he approaches him again for initiation, and Goshti Purnam is like, "No, I can't do it. I'm sorry. It's just really." It's none different from Narayan, this mantra. It brings you to the spiritual world. It's just not, it's so intimate, it's so personal, so powerful. I can't give it to anybody. So Ramanuja goes for 18 times to beg for initiation. And he's been refused 18 times. So you see the determination of Ramanuja. And the faith that he has in Mahapurnam, his other teacher, who told him to go to take initiation from Goshti Purna. So then the 19th time Ramanuja comes, and then Goshti Purna is like, okay, I'll give you the mantra, but you cannot ever tell it to anybody. I'll give it to you. You're the only person I'm giving this mantra to. It'll bring you to the spiritual world, to Narayan's lotus feet. You cannot give the mantra to anybody else. If you do that, you'll go to hell for eternity, because you can't just distribute Narayan to like anybody. It's so sacred, it's so pure. Just don't give it to anybody else. So Ramanuja says, yes, I promise. He gets the mantra, he goes back home. On his way back home, he sees all these people suffering, trying to take shelter of the material world, trying to enjoy the material world, and being frustrated by their attempts. And he feels so much compassion. Just because he's just received this mantra, he's immediately realized the power of this mantra by receiving it from this pure-hearted devotee. He feels so much compassion for all these people. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that love for Krishna in this world is expressed to compassion to the living entities. So if you see somebody suffer, if you have genuine a connection with Krishna, then and you see somebody suffering, you genuinely feel compassion for them and you want to help them. That's how love for God translates in this material world. So Ramanuja, he feels this intense compassion, and he knows this mantra can help everybody. So I think we all know the story. He calls everybody in the village. He says, "I have a jewel for you. I have something for you that'll make you happy, that'll solve all your problems." Soon everybody gets excited. It's like, yeah, there's this saint. He has a jewel. He wants to give us something. And so that, you know, everybody gets something for the material problems to be solved. So they all get excited, and they meet in one place. And Ramanuja, he climbs up the tower, and he makes an announcement. It's like, yes, there's thousands of people assembled by then. You know, in India, sometimes rumors can spread quite quickly, and immediately you have like within a short amount of time, you have a lot of people assembled. So there was like thousands of people, and Ramanuja just stands on his tower, and he's announcing that I have a jewel for you. I'll give you this mantra. With this mantra, you can, all your problems will be solved. All of you, if you chant it sincerely, you can get liberation. You can go to Narayan, to the spiritual world, serve Narayan eternally. All your material problems are solved. And so like that, if you chant the mantra sincerely, and then he, of course, chants Om Namo Narayanaya, gives the mantra to everybody, and like that, and then people take up the mantra and they chant, and then he goes, immediately he wants to go back to his guru to pay his obeisances and thank his spiritual master. But by the time he gets to his spiritual master, Goshti Purnam, he has already heard about what he was doing, and he was so angry. His eyes were red, and he was so upset with his disciple that, yeah, who are you? You're disobedient, unloyal, so-called disciple. I've told you not to give it to anybody, and you give it to everybody. Don't you know you're going to hell? I'm going to reject you. And then Ramanuja, of course, he's very peaceful within because he knows he's done the right thing. And very humbly, he apologizes to spiritual master and is like, yes, but you told me that whoever chants this mantra gets liberation, gets service, eternal service to Lord Narayan. So even if I have to go to hell, I'm fine. I'm happy to go to hell. That's no problem. You can just, you know, just curse me to go to hell. No problem. But if everybody else can get liberated for that, if I can sacrifice my life, my soul, my being, for everybody else's benefit, I'm happy with that. And then, of course, what can you say to that? You can't remain angry with somebody with a soul like that. And so, of course, Goshti Purnam becomes, you know, just melts with the devotion and humility and realization and compassion of Ramanujacharya. And he's actually then surrenders to Ramanuja. It's like, today you have become my guru. You have instructed me about the real meaning of Vaishnava Dharma, to be compassionate to all living entities, to serve the Vaishnavas, to chant the name with faith. What does it mean to chant the holy names with faith, with a sense of surrender? You've instructed me today. So then there's this sweet exchange between those two great Vaishnavas. Also we find that in the life of Lord Chaitanya, he was also very pleased when somebody would take up this mood of compassion and this mood of humble service towards the devotees. One example, I think, which we can mention, there's so many examples about his life, is that of Pratap Rudra Maharaj. He was the king in Jagannath Puri, and he was a king, so Lord Chaitanya wouldn't associate with the kings because he was a sannyasi. He would say, no, I can't talk to the king. He is the king. Kings are naturally surrounded by wealth and material opulence. So I'm a sannyasi, I can't talk to the king. But then, as soon as, even though Pratap Rudra Maharaj was a great devotee of Lord Chaitanya, but then King Pratap Rudra, he took off all his wealthy garments and everything, and he just dressed up as a beggar, as a Vaishnava beggar, and he went to do some simple service in front of Ratha Yatra, in front of Jagannath, and he served the Vaishnavas like that, and then he massaged Lord Chaitanya's legs and feet, and he recited some poetry glorifying Krishna. So Lord Chaitanya immediately became very pleased because he could see he doesn't approach me as a king, but he approaches me as a servant of my servants. So then Lord Chaitanya gives his full mercy to King Prataparudra and embraces him and asks him, oh, who are you, who are you? And then King Prataparudra, instead of saying, oh, I'm the king, by the way, he says, no, I'm a humble servant of your servants, and my only aspiration in life is to remain in this position. I only want to be able to serve your devotees life after life after life. And Lord Chaitanya is so happy with this attitude that he gives his full mercy to King Prataparudra. So just this attitude of taking shelter of the devotees, taking shelter of Krishna, identifying ourselves as their servants, as opposed to trying to gain shelter or anything in the material world, that's what inspires Krishna to give his mercy, to bestow his mercy upon us. That's what's pleasing to Krishna. So this is also what Lord Chaitanya has taught. And also, I think in the life of Srila Prabhupada, we can see that attitude of taking shelter of Krishna completely. Like Srila Prabhupada's life story, he comes at the age of 70. He comes to the West. He doesn't have anything. He just completely takes shelter of Krishna. And I think in his poetry that he wrote on the Jaladuta, I think that's such a beautiful illustration of his mood. It's like, oh, Krishna, I'm your puppet. Use me as you like. I just want to dance in your hands. So like that, he's praying. And then the result of that, I mean, the first day he was struggling, but it just brings out more how surrendered he was to Krishna, how much he takes shelter of Krishna. And then what could he do in just a short amount of time that was left for him in this world? What could Srila Prabhupada do? I mean, you see, like, temples everywhere, devotees everywhere. Wherever you go, in almost every country, you have devotees chanting the holy names. So many books that he wrote, so many instructions that he has given us. And primarily, of course, to chant the holy names. Like, you hear the chanting of the holy names everywhere. Like, even in like, whatever yoga industry or so many, it becomes so much more popular, the chanting of the Maha Mantra. And of course, if Prabhupada hadn't come to preach in the West, to go through the austerity, to instruct us lechas and meat eaters and, you know, all our other qualifications that we have, then if Prabhupada hadn't gone through that austerity to deal with us, other people tried before and they couldn't do it. There's acharyas, great devotees who came to the West before who've tried to preach, who weren't successful for whatever reasons. But Prabhupada was chosen to do that job, to do that service. And he completely surrendered to Krishna's will. And because of his surrender, all of us are sitting here. And all of us get a chance to chant Krishna's names. And to get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, and eventually to go back to worship Radha Gopinath, go back to our eternal service at the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath. Okay, on this note, I'd like to see if there's any comments or questions, corrections. How to develop compassion and humility. Well, actually, I think unless you're on the platform of Bhava, whatever we do is like an psychological mental exercise, because real humility is a symptom of Bhava. So that comes when you actually realize your relationship with Krishna. Then you understand, okay, you know, it's like, it's a realization, it's real. Before that, I think there's you know, a lot of exercises sometimes, you know, we can do. We just meditate on our qualifications. Even just taking responsibility, working with devotees, I think that's anybody, I think, who has worked, try to manage anything or try to teach or try to take some responsibility, I think you know how much power you have. And you really have to be humble to get things done, to have other people working with you, cooperating. So there's, what else? I think there's a lot of things, you know, a lot of, things that can invoke a feeling of humility. Become a teacher. Yes. Become a teacher. Become a manager. Even just in a small way. You know, just try to work on a project with other devotees. You have to be humble. In order to tell them what to do, you have to be humble. Compassion. Well, it is compassion is a real compassion is, as I said, it translates is a translation of our love for Krishna. So, well, whatever. To whatever extent that's there, but of course, also just thinking about meditating upon our own situation. Where would we be without receiving compassion from other people, from other devotees, and then extending that to another devotee? I think that's a powerful way. But maybe there's some other ideas. Power of association and service is a powerful way of opening our hearts to the person that we serve, and then we take on the qualities of the person that we serve. Thank you. That's an essential point, right? And it's also what Vidura says to Maitreya in this verse. Do you have anything else? I'm sure you've thought about that before. Okay, just on time. Srila Prabhupada. Okay. Okay. Okay, one more. Well, Krishna may keep us in a position which will, if he sees that's something, well, karma, just, okay, back off a little bit here. Karma, the idea of karma is to teach us lessons that we haven't learned. That's the whole idea of karma. So sometimes Krishna, so then whatever nature we have, that's a result of karma, that's a result of previous activities that we've done. So Krishna may decide to keep us in a particular situation because we haven't perhaps learned something, or there's something useful for us to remain in a situation, or he may even keep us in a situation that doesn't seem very favorable, just so that we can learn to surrender to him more. So it's really up to Krishna how much he's going to change situations or not. But we can expect him to take away obstacles on our path. So just for us to be whatever conditioned in a particular way may not be an obstacle on our path to Krishna. It may actually help us to realize our limitations and to be humble and to take shelter. So, okay, Krishna, I'm impatient. I'm too fast. I'm too slow. I'm whatever. I'm chronically sick. I can't do certain things, but that's not an impediment on our devotional. In our devotional service. Because devotional service, also in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami explains, there's no material impediment for practicing devotional service. There's always something. Even if you're completely bedridden, you can still think of Krishna. Or even if we're in whatever situation, we can always, there's always something we can do. Bhakti is not limited to material circumstances. So sometimes a circumstance which may seem unfavorable and we think, oh Krishna, please, do something about this. It may just be an impediment for an impetus for us to take more shelter of Krishna. So sometimes Krishna may not change the situation at all. He may just even put us in more difficulties. But then it's up to us how we respond to the situation. And that's an internal thing. That's not so much an external response sometimes. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe somebody else has some other realizations on that. Yeah, good point. Yeah, the lessons will come up again and again, even in a different form or shape or size or circumstance, if you don't learn it. It's true. Yeah, unless we can learn to surrender to Krishna and to actually become genuinely a servant of the devotees and of Krishna. That's the ultimate lesson that we have to learn, or that we are allowed to learn by the mercy of the devotees, specifically here. Okay. Oh. The servants of Srila Prabhupada are waiting. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai. Gaura Premam. Thank you very much.